Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to Awakening to True Happiness with modern-day mystic David Hoffmeister, offering you the how-to to spiritual awakening by addressing on a practical level answers to your deepest questions. David Hoffmeister is a world-renowned teacher of A Course in Miracles and has been traveling the world for the past quarter of a century, offering his wisdom to audiences wherever invited. On this show, you'll hear recordings of David's best live talks, inviting you into an experience of deep wisdom and true clarity. To learn more about David, visit his website at davidhoffmeister.com. Awakening to True Happiness with David Hoffmeister is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. Hi, so beautiful to see you. Hi, Francis.
Hi, David. Hi, everybody. Lovely to be here, spending this whole weekend together.
Yeah, Francis and I were talking this morning, and wow, this is our way of life now. Tabula rasa, it's the title of the weekend retreat, because that's how we are living our life. And so if we do look rather clueless and innocent, then that's a good sign, because we are really clueless. And the deeper we go, the more clueless we get about everything. We're very happy, though.
You know, we're here, you know, to listen to the spirit together and give ourselves over to feel the spirit, which is love. And this is the way that we want to live our lives. This is the way we want to spend every moment, to just give our mind over to the spirit, to tell us, you know, his thoughts, to tell us what, how to follow him, you know, how to live our lives. And truly, I feel this awakening journey is a journey to come back to this very humble and very honest place, to say that I do not know anything. I do not know what the world is for. I do not know my own best interest. I do not know, you know, how to get me back to be one with God, to that awareness. And so really it is a gradual journey to realize that, and when we admit that so full-heartedly, we're able just to ask without reservation. And Jesus says in the Course that the ability to hear guidance is in direct correspondence to the willingness or the desire to hear. So truly here, we're just purifying our desire day after day, the desire to hear only one voice, the desire to be led, the desire to not having to know anything and be shown. So.
Yeah, it's so rich. So a number of you have written in some prayers and some questions, but I think it's always good for us to just start from from this point of coming with a willingness to see that we have been completely mistaken about everything. The positive judgments, the negative judgments, the compliments, the criticisms, the praise, and the put-downs, the things we were sure we did very well, and the things that we were sure we messed it up. But suddenly, through the grace of God, we didn't mess up. Wow. I was convinced otherwise there for a while. I was really carrying a heavy, heavy burden. So for us, this is how we approach things day in, day out. And whenever Francis and I get together, you know, we don't mind talking about guidance, because for us, guidance is not a bad word. It's not a bad word. It's actually a very helpful experience to have guidance. And it's through the living of the guidance and sharing it daily and just pouring out our hearts and really praying together and saying, what do you feel? And being so open and so receptive that allows us to tune in to that guidance. So what do you think, Francis? Should we share a little bit about guidance? Because
yeah,
that's something that sometimes people say, oh, well, it's I either can't be guided, or I'm not consistently guided, or some people just say, I don't even believe it's possible. Or other people tell me it's not even possible. And those are all things to be aware of.
Yeah. And I do know that at the beginning, this idea was very foreign to my own upbringing or background. It's one thing to say that, okay, there is a spirit where that's like after mind training, maybe you can reach it one day, but it's another thing to say you can actually live your life and be guided and not rely on your own past experience and your own judgment. It was very, you know, I remember I had this suspicious mind to think, how is that possible? You know, if I don't make decisions, everything would turn into chaos, or nothing would happen. Nothing would happen. My life would just turn into nowhere and nothing. That's really the suspicion underneath. But I have to say that, you know, what has really happened in the past 10 years was that to actually be able to see firsthand that the spirit is guiding absolutely everything in our lives. And if we give this willingness over to let the spirit use the symbols in our lives, and to the degree we give the symbols over to the spirit to say, you're in charge, you know, you're gonna be in charge of the interpretation of the events, you're gonna be in charge of the interpretation of the relationship, and I'm gonna give everything to you, and then I'm gonna be here to let you decide, then that is a good space to actually be able to see the spirit at work, and then everything turn out to be beautiful. And I do know that it's the same for David, that you actually was completely convinced through your own experience, but not through just words from a book, but it was kind of undeniable experience day in and day out, which was very out of the box, very different from the decisions that we would make based on our own past references and our own frame of thinking. And it was we were completely convinced through that kind of experience that everything worked together for good, you know, if we give it over to the spirit. So that is, we all need that kind of convincing to truly trust.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people who have been drawn to A Course in Miracles too, it's not like they were necessarily raised in an environment or raised with role models that were sprinkled all over the place. It's not like they were surrounded in an environment of prayer and guidance. And it just dawned on me some weeks ago when I showed this Billy Graham movie, this documentary about Billy Graham's life. And then after that movie, then I started to see a few things on YouTube about Billy Graham's children. And it was like, oh yeah, that would be fascinating to grow up as one of Billy Graham's children, because your mother and father are constantly talking about prayer, about the Lord's guidance, about spreading the message of Jesus, about spreading the message of forgiveness, and how every trip to every country, every encounter, and a whole community, they're all buzzing about God and buzzing about prayer and guidance. And for most of us, we didn't grow up in that kind of environment. We weren't constantly hearing about guidance and how it works. We weren't seeing evidence of it. We weren't seeing daily evidence of it. So in one sense, we grew up without a context of how guidance could solve everything for us. If we just would listen and follow, we would be peaceful and happy in the simplest way. So I went through, of course, I went through like Bible school, and I was raised in a Christian church, but you know, we didn't really talk much about guidance. We talked a little bit about prayer, but it wasn't like a practical thing. It's not like in the morning and breakfast, we wouldn't hold hands and pray and say, what are you guided to do today? What are you guided to do? That was the farthest thing from it. You know, it was all about, oh, it's cold outside. Who's going to scrape off the windshield, and who's going to shovel, you know, Cincinnati, Ohio, who's going to shovel the driveway and the sidewalk? And oh, are we going to have school today? Did we check the monitor? Or is school canceled? You know, we weren't talking about guidance. And then when I got into university for 10 years, you know, the first year was engineering. No, we didn't talk about guidance in the College of Engineering at the University of Cincinnati. We talked about calculus, and we talked about vectors and all kinds of mechanics of how things work. And then after that, I was in the School of Design, Art, and Architecture, and I majored in urban planning. In 5 years of urban planning, guess how much we talked about guidance and prayer? Zippo, zilch. And then when I left that 5 years of urban planning, I found out that two of my professors were Christian Scientists and never even told me. Well, I saw them at a church, a Christian Science church, after I was out of urban planning. I said, what are you doing here? David, what are you? You know, they kept it quiet. Nobody talks about guidance. Nobody talks about these things. And so when I got into psychology, you know, I call it, I was into rat psychology for a while, B.F. Skinner and stimulus response. But when I kind of worked my way on my own interests more into humanistic psychology and transpersonal psychology, then the psychologists I was reading were talking about your intuition. Follow your intuition, follow your heart. Still not calling it guidance, still not calling it prayer, but I we can relate to that. Follow your heart, follow your intuition. Or Joseph Campbell, follow your bliss. Yeah, I like that. Joseph, I like that. Follow your bliss. That sounds good to me. I'm going to go for that. But still, we weren't talking about guidance. And then, as Francis was saying, when I got into A Course in Miracles, I started to really, really see and have experiences where I would get inner promptings, little nudges, feelings arising, drawing me, calling me, pulling me towards certain things, towards certain people, towards certain books, to meet certain people. I don't know why I have to meet them, but I think I have a feeling I have to meet them today. I don't know what it is, but it's a strong feeling. And that was the beginning of starting to pay attention to these inner nudges that eventually came to be guidance. Eventually, it became of instructions. It became words speaking to me, words speaking through me. It became so natural. It became more natural than breathing. The guidance became more natural than breathing. It became so intimate where it was like, of course. And then the more we started to come together, I met with people all over the country and all over the world, and sometimes we start to live together, we would just be saying, I'm feeling this, or I'm feeling this. It doesn't mean we had formal ways of speaking about this, but we started to be very transparent what we were feeling. I'm feeling a strong call to this. I'm feeling a nudge to do this. I'm feeling to connect with so-and-so. I don't know why, but it's a strong feeling. I need to call so-and-so, or I need to visit so-and-so. And as we gave way to this new way of living, then everything unfolded so amazingly. Everything just started to fall into place like it had always been in place. And now we were just seeing that it was all connected, and it was all part of a perceived whole, a connected perception that was so wonderful. It was delicious. It was glorious to experience. And yet we were led into it through a series of nudges and prompts and guidances. And it became very natural. So that's why in our tabula rasa state of mind, guidance is in the forefront. And as the famous mystic peace pilgrim used to say, she said, yeah, I just go along. You know, she walked around and around the United States and Canada for many years with her silver hair. And she was so into the flow of spirit. And she used to say, yeah, I'm just flowing along, doing what I'm inspired to do. And then if ever I have a doubt, a problem will come along and knock me back on the path. What a philosophy. If ever I have a doubt, a problem will come along and knock me back on the path. The problems knock us back into our intuition. The problems direct us back to live 100% intuitively and 0% analytically. 0% based on just past learning, and 100% on inspiration. What brings me joy? What inspires me? So I think this is important that we're talking about this, because if you have a willingness to open up to this, then you have everything that you need. And actually, there was a few things that were written in, but I think it was Stephanie who wrote in, and she's right there at our Living Miracles Monastery. But she wrote in a little piece to Francis and I this morning, and I think we can use that as a little launching pad. Stephanie wrote, "Dear David and Francis, this morning, the words from the Course came to my mind. The willingness to communicate attracts communication, and it awakes in me a sense of curiosity and adventure and joy. My attention is drawn to the word willingness. I feel the lightness and the openness. There is no push and expectation. I feel the gift behind these words. I feel like Jesus stands with open arms and invites me to come, to fall in love. I pray to be shown the obstacles to my willingness. With love and gratitude, Stephanie. And it's interesting, Stephanie, because I was just up there at the monastery, and I know those words came out of my mouth. The willingness to communicate attracts communication, because I was very shy and I was very reserved and I was very hesitant about communicating. And I could feel that those words that you mentioned were like a key to me at learning to fulfill my life's purpose, because I knew I had some fear around communication. I knew I was very selective about who I would communicate with and I wouldn't communicate with. I was very protective. I was shy because I believed there was safety in shyness. I was timid because I believed there was something to fear in opening my heart up. And because I was afraid to communicate, I was limiting my own awareness of what was possible. So then Jesus got a hold of me and I started communicating. And I did so much communicating with speaking and writing and calling people on the phone and communicating so fully that it took me into a different state of mind from the state of mind that I was accustomed to. It took me into a place where I felt I was really in communication with everyone and everything in a very broad sense of the word of communication. I think communion is a better word for it now, but at the time, I would not have understood communion. I would just say, oh, I know what communication is, and I'm hesitant. I'm hesitant. So I feel like that is a lesson for all of us, that every day as we wake up and we pray to be guided and we pray to be shown the day, that we will be given these little communication assignments with many, many different people. And everyone is meant to open our hearts up. Everyone is meant to allow ourselves to feel the love that wants to come through us and that lives in us, as us. So to me, communication is beautiful. I'm so glad you wrote that in. Yes, we're all praying for the willingness. We're praying for that willingness.
Yeah, it feels really good. Even with the topic of communication, I just thought of something that's in the course about, you know, Jesus talk about absolutely everything in this world. The ego has given it a purpose, and people, relationships, our own body, other people's bodies, there is always a purpose the ego gave. And then Jesus says, nobody can fail you except your idea of them. So it's like we have set up, or the ego has set up, these massive expectations and roles and functions for everybody and everything. And if we, you know, if we're letting ego be the guide to go through our life, is a massive disappointment and fear every day, because things are constantly presenting themselves as problems of some sort, disappointments. And yet Jesus said, nobody can fail you except your idea of them. So really, what is what is failing us is these expectations and these roles. And that includes our own so-called body. Like, we set up these roles for the body to fulfill. And the body, we gave the body the function of pleasure, attack, and pride, to accumulate credit, to accumulate pride, to be something, and to receive pleasure. But the one thing Jesus says is that communication is the only function while you still perceive you have a body. That is the only function that the spirit gives the body. So if I really think the body has the body fail us constantly, but what is truly failing is the idea of it and the function we give to it. And the only purpose of the body has is to reach another mind. That's the spirit gives the body its function, to reach another mind. And that's why I was listening to you, David. You were saying the moment you start to open up to communication, let the spirit communicate to reach another mind, you open up to feel you're absolutely one with everybody and everything, because that is the essence of the spirit. And that is really the only way to heal, is to repurpose everything. It's not like holding on to the same purpose we give and the same role and hoping things would be different. And that is such a such a devastating curriculum if that is the way that we have to go through this curriculum. Jesus actually says this is very frustrating if the students cannot learn the lesson that it says to learn. But this is the lesson set up by the ego, that you, everything has to change except your mind. Everything has to change. Everything is a presenting problem for you to fix outside. But here we're saying we are giving this purpose back to the spirit. You're going to use the body as purely a communication device to reach another mind. And that way the body cannot fail, because it does not have any other function. And nobody else can fail. The world cannot fail us, because we're going to let the spirit give everybody and everything another purpose. And that is why we need guidance, because we cannot make the decision, because the decisions that the ego would guide us to make is still based on the same purpose and the same goal. So that's why, you know, we want to be so stepped back to say, okay, there is something rotten in the core here. It's not just a little event that is not working out here. It's actually the deepest thing that is not functioning is the purpose that we're giving everything. But that is also where the decision is. We can say that, okay, my relationship, my everything in my world can be given over to the spirit to reinterpret, reuse. And that's where we can start to be open to communication, if that is the only function spirit give the body. If that is the only way we can be happy. You know, the problem is now that we don't hear the guidance, or that we don't listen to the spirit, is that we don't only listen to the spirit. It's because we do listen to the spirit, we do listen to the ego. That's why our mind is split. So we're here to nurture this willingness, as Stephanie said, the willingness to listen to only the spirit, to give the body and our world the only purpose to be used by the spirit, to reach another mind. So
yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. And Francis, I know you and I were just talking this morning about that part in the course where Jesus said that the dreams that you think you like can hold you back as much as those in which the fear is present. So, you know, that's like, it's asking us to really trust the spirit because we don't know our own best interest. And the reason that we haven't known our own best interest is because we've already pre-decided what's positive and what's negative. And once we decide based on our past learning what's positive, what's worth going for as a future goal, and what's negative, what's worth avoiding as a future goal, once we've already done that, we've already bitten off a full piece of the ego and we've gone in the wrong direction. There's a very famous song that says, you've got to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative and don't mess with Mr. In Between. Well, actually, Mr. In Between is the Holy Spirit. And we have to do more than mess with what's in between. We have to embrace forgiveness. We have to embrace that we've been completely wrong about everything, that all of our past learning through our books, through our parents, through our cultures, through our societies that tried to teach us the difference between good and bad has been all mistaken. As Jesus says, it's, if you judge anything positively or negatively, then you are not right. And you cannot know your innocence. You cannot know true peace and happiness while you believe that you are right, either positively or negatively. It's not a matter of trying to put pink paint over everything. It's more a matter of stepping back in your mind with Jesus and the Holy Spirit, and they will show you that you never really had the capability to judge anything accurately, positively or negatively, that all of your judgments have been mistaken, and that there is a state of mind that transcends all of these mistaken judgments. Now, that can be daunting. It can be like overwhelming to think, well, maybe Jesus reached that state of mind, but what chance do I have? And Jesus says, well, you have every chance, every day, every moment is a chance to be guided by the Holy Spirit. Every moment is a chance to pray and to say, show me the way. You give me what I should extend in this moment. You give it to me and I will do it. I will be your servant, Lord. I will be a vessel for your light. I will be the light of the world because you can do this through me so that I may know who I truly am. So if this becomes your method, if you really want to go for this, you're in for a very great, great adventure. You're in for an adventure of your lifetime. You know, because when people think of things in regard to this world, they usually have some trepidation, some fear, some hesitation. My friend Jeffrey here, he just drove a car across the United States, and we were just rejoicing in all the encounters and all the lessons that come with simply driving a car across the United States. What a trip, what an adventure it is, because you encounter so many things and you have so many opportunities to be prayerful and to be guided. And then as you really relax into that, wow, it just, everything opens up in front of you. And that's been for me, the joy of this earth experience is it's the adventure of guidance. It's the adventure of listen and follow. It's like, ooh, at the beginning I was like, ooh, oh no, whoa. But then after a while it was like, ooh, this is good. This is exciting. You are with me every step of the way. You are going to show me. I trust in you to lead me and to not try to already think I know. This is how the dismantling of the ego occurs, the dismantling of the self-concept. If I already think I know something when I get out of bed in the morning, it's going to be a difficult day. It's going to be difficult. But if I get out of bed and those feet hit the ground and I don't know what's coming, but I'm in for the adventure of being used, wow, it is exciting. It's exciting to put your feet on the ground every morning if you have that state of mind. So this is very deep wisdom. You know, like Francis was saying, if we already think we know who people are, if we've already let the ego give them a role, then we have expectations. It's almost like, okay, come on, that's your role. Now fulfill your role. And Jesus is telling us these ego roles will never be satisfying, will never be ever completely fulfilled, and will always leave you feeling like you've just been deprived of something, or you come up a little short. You didn't quite fully realize the lesson. And then, as Francis, you're sharing, yeah, we're supposed to let them go, let go of these roles and expectations, and be as little children as we go through the day.
Yeah, like you said, Jesus was saying about the dream we like, the dream we think we like are but the dreams where people seem to fulfill the roles that we gave them, and we like it because the roles are fulfilled. And the dream we don't like is that they fail to fulfill the roles. So that's really the only two categories that we're having in this earth experience. But he said that both are flimsy covers of something else, which is the desire to dream at all. And that is where the fear is. It's not whether the dream, one dream is that all the roles are fulfilled, you're happy a little bit or not. The fear is covered by one of the two, and the earth experience that the ego set up is that we chase one, and then once we receive it, it's not really satisfying, so the ego switch goes, and we chase it again, and we chase it again, and then we're trying to solve the ones that are not fulfilling. But this is such a cover-up, and we are here really to say, okay, this is not going to fool us anymore. This way of living, this kind of goal that we constantly set up for our mind to pursue is not going to fool us anymore. And we are going to give it all up. And Spirit said, imagine how happy you would be if Spirit going to put his interpretation on everything for you, every single role, every single interpretation. So this is really the healing, you know, constant prayer to let the Spirit interpret everything. Let the Spirit guide us toward the actions. And that's really how the healing happens. But deep down, it's because of this fundamental deception we're living. But we are awakening now. So that is truly the good news, because the course is aimed at eliminating fear completely, not keeping it, not minimizing it, not partially solve some and keep other, but is eliminating it eliminate completely. And this is the way. This is the way that Jesus points out. So.
Yeah. And though it seems radical, I mean, I have one friend I talked to a couple of weeks ago, and she said she talked to her parents, her mom and dad, and they basically, her dad said, don't even come home. She's probably in her 30s, but don't even come home. Don't even come visit us until you're either married or you have a job. There's some expectations, you know. We have to laugh at it because we've all gone through these things where, you know, there's these expectations that are laid on us. And what Francis was sharing earlier, no, the ego, we did this to ourselves. We made up these expectations. We can't put it on mom and dad anymore. I had another talk with a friend yesterday, and her dad was telling her, don't come home until you have completed your university studies. You don't come home till you have your degree. Wow, that's some heavy duty stuff. You know, you have to like almost like meet a condition to go home to visit your parents. But these are examples of expectations and roles that the ego has set up. Christ did not set these roles up. The Holy Spirit's helping us release these roles and start to realize we're more than enough. We're children of God. We're perfect children of God and always have been. And it's only been these make-believe roles where we believe we had to prove to somebody how good we were or demonstrate we were worthy of their love. You know, if people say, I won't have dinner with you unless you're married or unless you have a job, it's like, wow, that's a lot of, that's putting a lot of conditions on just having dinner, just visiting for dinner. You get to the door, okay, are you married? Get your married card out. Or do you have a job? Okay, you can enter, you know, but without that, no, stay outside. You're not welcome until you've achieved some status or you've reached something in the world, some type of worthiness is judged by the world. So we're all in this together to realize that we can release these things. And I guarantee you that when you release them, it is going to look so funny. When you release these roles, and when you release everybody from the roles, you're going to laugh. You're just going to have the biggest, longest belly laugh at the idea that you ever thought you needed to hold on to these, not enough, not good enough, need more of this, need more of that. I mean, they're common for the human condition, but they're not common to Christ, and they're not common in heaven. So we're transcending together. We're being raised up together away from all these false limiting beliefs and concepts that we've held on to. Well, what do you think, Francis? I always like these opening sessions where we get to hear from everyone what's going on in your life. Yeah. Some of you have written in some things, but also some of you just have something that's on your heart right now, today.
Yeah, we can open it up.
And I see Anna Cecilia has got hers up. That's a good place for us to start.
Hello, thank you. Thank you so much for this. Good to see you. Well, I just came back after some deep, deep silence. And one of the things that came up was the tolerance for mind wandering. And somehow the silence helped me be aware of this monkey mind. This is really a monkey mind. I mean, there's no connection between one thought and the next. And suddenly you're thinking about what you're going to eat, and then you are in a beach in, I don't know, Sanadu or whatever. It's like insane. So that was very present. And then coming back, I think it was yesterday or the day before, I went to the MWGE.org Facebook page, and there was a recommendation for a Star Trek episode. And I've been watching Star Trek as an awakening, mind awakening device, because it has been like a deep journey into my mind and lots of feelings coming up. But I hadn't seen that episode, so I went looking for it. And it was the one about people pleasing, the one about this metamorph, like this lady that really, like, she has this, like, an empath. So she can see what the other one wants and become that straight away and give the other one everything they want. And that really first made me realize how difficult for me is to communicate. Somewhere this character trained herself through life to be so much aware of others. Like, I have this like sensibility, I don't know how to call it, but I immediately put my attention on what's happening outside, on what people might be feeling, on how they might be reacting, what's coming up for everyone around, which of course stops me from looking inward, from looking into what I'm feeling or what's in my mind. So trying to change that, like with the help of spirit, which I couldn't do it alone, it became very clear how difficult it is for me to relate. I don't know. I haven't got a clue of how to relate differently. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Anna Cecilia. Yeah. Well, the ego made the world to reinforce a false identity, and Jesus really goes at that in the text. It's kind of like he's saying the ego's belief is you are the cause of what I feel. And because of that, I need to know what you're feeling, and I need to do everything possible to please you so that you'll like me, because this false codependent identity is totally built on the other. You know, self, smaller self takes the second place to what other people think of me. So that would be like the ego's basically dictum, or its whole basis is what other people think of me is who I am. It's really, I mean, talk about placing your state of mind in a totally vulnerable, codependent position. Is you are the cause of what I feel. So you're asking now, how do I turn that around? Because that's the underlying belief, then that means that your former attempts at communication were people-pleasing attempts to use communication solely for people-pleasing, like this. The Star Trek episode, it's called The Perfect Mate, where the metamorph, you know, she was born only to mate and to please her man. That's it. She has no other purpose other than to mate and to please her man. And she even says in it, it is for this that I exist. And so part of her skills are she has these empathic abilities to feel what everyone around her is feeling, and particularly with men, to feel their desires, to feel their wants, to feel what she needs to do to feel, act, to behave in a way that will please them. Because ultimately that fits in with her ultimate goal. She's only to mate and to be the perfect mate. There's no sense of self apart from that conditioning to be the perfect mate. And so what you're describing is really not uncommon. It's a shock at some point when people go through their lives and they suddenly have this shocking realization that they've lived their life for everyone else, for parents, for siblings, for coworkers, for friends, for neighbors. They've totally lost all sense of a holistic self, and they're simply like a shadow dancing in the wind at the mercy of what other people want, because the desire has been to serve those others. And what Jesus is telling us is that there's really nothing outside of you. You as a mind, you as the Christ are whole and complete, and there's only one of us. There's not multiple of us. There's really only one of us. But this is why the intuition and the guidance are so important, because without that intuitive guidance, what chance do you have to come back to center when you've flung yourself literally like the scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz? The flying monkeys come, they knock the scarecrow down, and they pull the straw out of the scarecrow, and they spew it all over the yellow brick road. And so there's a head there and a few pieces of clothing, and then the scarecrow is just like laying there totally disempowered until Dorothy and his friends come along and they start to gather up the straw and bring the straw back in, pack it back in there so he can stand up again. He can't even stand up. He's just laying there in pieces with straw all over the yellow brick road. So it starts with being very intuitive and very honest with yourself. It starts with one simple thing: how do I feel? Jesus says that how do I feel is the one right use of judgment, that you can use how you feel as a barometer, as a starting barometer to start to come back to center. Because in the end, we are shown that if we purify our consciousness, we can feel love. If we purify our awareness, we can feel the peace. We can feel the natural emotions that it is to be the Christ when we go through this purification process. So for many people who have been used to just saying yes to every single person and thing in their life, there is a phase of no's. But it's not a push away no. It's more of I need to fully feel the value of something, and that takes you into your function, because extending the miracle is your function. Being a miracle worker is your function, and that is what sets the mind free from these codependent and people-pleasing concepts. So there's stages and steps along the way where even in A Course in Miracles, pretty early on, Jesus says, if a brother asks something insane of you, do it for them. And then he qualifies it about 100 pages later by saying, as long as it doesn't bring harm to yourself or anyone else. And what he's saying at the beginning, when you have a lot of pride and you're so stuck on doing everything out of just the pride of who you believe you are, then you aren't opening up. But in your case, it sounds like you've been so sensitized and so empathic towards everything and everyone that now you really do have to use the barometer of your feelings in a very direct way to reverse that egoic process, to bring it back. And I know those were some of the biggest seeming steps that I took in the early years, is because the past learning was so thick that instead of just like a knee-jerk reaction of saying, yes, oh, yes, I'll come to this. Yes, I'll do this. Yes, I'll handle this. You know, just as a reaction, an automatic reaction, I would give myself at least time to pause and pray. And that was a big thing for me because I did not come from a family that was prayerful in that way. Prayers were something you said before a meal, not something that you prayed on as if your whole connection with God depended on it. It was just a more of a rote word thing. So I think you're bringing up an important topic for everyone, and I feel like that's at the core of really moving into this tabula rasa frame of mind, is that there's a workbook lesson in which Jesus says, everything I think and say and do teaches all the universe. That kind of thinking is common in the workbook of A Course in Miracles, but it's absolutely unknown in the linear world of time and space. What do you mean, everything I think, say, and do teaches all the universe? That seems like a nonsense phrase. You know, if you said something like that in a university, they would say, what, do you have a God complex? And actually, we are learning to tune in as a perfect child of God and put God first in everything, and not put our past learning as the default program. So I'm so glad you had your Vipassana, though, because it gave you the spaciousness to just maybe even be more aware of the monkey mind, be more aware of the seeming randomness of the thoughts, and more deserving to find that quiet center that is beneath all of those directions of thought. And it could give you a chance to smile and laugh a bit at the thoughts instead of taking them too seriously. Because, you know, that would be really crazy if those were our real thoughts.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Awakening to True Happiness with modern-day mystic David Hofmeister. You can access more of David's teachings by visiting his website at davidhofmeister.com. Tune in to David again next week on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 radio network.